Hey, ladies and gentlemen, I am Luminous.
And I'm Rico.
And welcome to another episode of the Top Deck Time. We are in episode 19, and my co-host will be Rico, as always, hailing from the hot weathers of Austria. I've heard that the temperature has risen to a very uncomfortable level.
It has. But it's supposed to get better soon, so I hope I'll be able to get a good night's sleep then.
And you may have noticed I'm hailing from under the sea. I'm not at home right now. I'm just recording on my laptop. I've tried to acquire an actual decent mic. This episode is sponsored by The Little Mermaid. And the next episode might be as well. I do apologize. I'm currently in the fine weathers of Seattle, which is quite nice. I came from Hong Kong. And the summer there is actually very hot and humid. So when you go out, you feel sticky and you're just like, ugh. Like you feel like you want to take a shower. But Seattle, a little bit chilly at night, but in the daytime, just warm. Not hot, just warm. Just feels good.
Nice. So tell us about why you are in Seattle.
Yeah, so I'm casting this tournament called the International for Dota 2. We just finished the group stage. Two teams got eliminated from the tournament. 16 team moves on. And next week is the main event. So if you are a fan of Dota 2, you might see me casting at the main event. Should be hype. I am ready to go.
It sounds nice. And you're living in the total luxury.
I'm not even total luxury. They didn't even have a jacuzzi in this hotel. So
No whirlpool this time. Down. No whirlpool this time. Yeah, that's
no whirlpool.
That's a downgrade. That's true.
Yeah, it really is. Valve stepped it up. Alright, let's actually move away from Seattle and into the world of Eternal card game. As always, yes. We're going to start things off by talking about some Eternal news. We had the ETS Top 8 finishing just hours before recording this. Mm-hmm. And guess what? Praxis Midrange takes the crown for a second week in a row. I do believe it is the exact Praxis midrange list,
yes,
as we discussed last
week. Yes, with a 75 main deck copy, yes.
Yeah, so if you haven't listened to last week's episode, you should. But if you haven't, it's basically a list that's trying to outvalue you with things like Heart of the Vault, Predatory Connoisseur, and just basically have a bunch of big units. Recurring Dawnwalkers, Sandstorm Titan, obviously, Shatterglass Mage, removal spells including Obliterate, Praxis Displacer, and mostly it's trying to just beat you down. Has the one Miser Flame Blast, because low, it kills people. And honestly, it's one of those like, hey, I'm gonna just deploy very big guys for the power I'm sinking into it and deal with it. And most decks are having trouble dealing with it.
I find it kind of curious that the three Heart of the Vault trend is continuing. I, for the life of me, can't figure out why.
Well, I don't think this is a trend. I just think that this is just an exact copy of the same 75.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah. Like, I think Ogreman, who won the tournament, congratulations to him, just copy-pasted the list, and why not? It's a winning list, and he showed that he can do it again. I still think that, like, playing the fourth Heart of the Vault would be, like, so beneficial to the deck. It's one of the, if not the best card. And like every game I played with Praxis, be it that this list or the Dark Praxis or ones that we've brewed up, I just found myself wanting Heart of the Vault either in my hand or ideally on top of my deck every game all the time. So I can't really agree with a 3 as the number that has been settled on.
Well, it's won 2 weeks in a row, so hard to disagree with that.
Yeah, it's obviously, like, when the exact same copy of a deck wins 2 weeks in a row, that does speak to the quality of the deck, and there's no doubt this is a strong deck. I just feel like it could be even stronger with the fourth heart.
I guess to back up your suspicion, again, I'm going to draw the example of the Rakano Plate. It's been a deck that's been around forever, and yet we're still innovating upon it, so even though this Praxis Midrange X has taken the tournament scene 2 weeks in a row, it doesn't mean that it's a perfect deck moving forward, at least, as the meta changed around it. Let's actually try to change the meta around it by talking about a deck that we believe that could beat it, and it is also another tournament winner. Why don't you actually talk about this midweek tournament, because I personally don't know much about it.
To be honest, I don't either. But there has been like a tournament on Thursday, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah, it was Thursday, and there were a little bit fewer players than in the ETS. I think like the ETS is a little bit more well known, and not a lot of players did know about the event on Thursday. Also, for me, it was like at a very, very bad time, so Europeans basically couldn't play it. It was like at 4 a.m. in the morning.
Mm.
So maybe that's why there were a few players as well. But like this deck, this tournament got taken down by a list that is, I think, very interesting, and it was piloted by Kamado. So again, congratulations, you win. The deck was like at first glance, you might think it is an armory list, but it really isn't. It's just like playing Fire, Justice, and Shadow, mid rangey control, I guess. The interesting part is that he's playing 4 Statuary Maiden plus 4 Steward of the Past, so the full 8 Void Hate cards. And I think that's actually very smart right now, because those cards are just very, very strong against all the Dawnwalker shenanigans that people try to put you in. But also, those cards are very, very good against the aggressive decks. Like, if you're playing an aggressive deck and your opponent plays a Maiden and you can't handle it, I mean, we've all been there. It just feels horrible. And the same with Steward of the Past. It's really hard to get by him. Like, even if you do have a Finest Hour or a Torch or something to get to the fifth toughness, he's probably trading 2-for-1. So those are cards that are very good against aggressive and mid-range decks. And on top of that, he's playing 4 Vanquish and 4 Slay, so the full 8 hard removal spell against large units. And as we talked about, like, that this is Praxis' game plan, playing large unit after large unit. So I think that was a very smart decision for the metagame. Like, we played this deck in one of the events as well.
Let me talk about that real fast. We do have another weekend event, and basically it's just constructive ranked, but a little bit more higher stakes. And we've discussed events on this podcast previously, so we're not going to talk too much about it. But this particular event, you play 9 games total, regardless of how many wins or losses. And we went 6-3, and basically it just dumpsters on unit decks, right? You know, the Maiden is absolutely so amazing against units. Story of the Past is really, really good. At least trades a 1-for-1. And then, like you mentioned, 4 Vanquish, 4 Slay just kills units. The other part of the deck is 4
Harsh Rule as well.
4 Harsh Rule that, you know, good against the Gold Y decks. And then you have 4 Auric Runehammer. I really personally enjoy the Auric Runehammer plus the Harsh Rule package, because it gives you good coverage against decks that are, you know, just having 1 or 2 units versus decks that have like 5 units. And between the two cards, you do very well. It also is running for like various favor for small units. It just kills all the units. I do believe that deck that you're mentioning right now does have a kind of a soft spot against control decks in particular. You know, there's some games where they're just sitting there beating down on us with the Relic Weapon, and we have like 3 Slays in our hand. We're like, well, what are we doing with our lives? So that's why it does run 4 copies of Mokdo. We took out a copy of Mokdo for Claw of the First Dragon.
Lumi did,
and,
not me.
It really should have been an Ikaria, but you know, I just wanted every excuse to play Claw of the First Dragon. Every time I draw Claw of the First Dragon, I'm like, yeah, Ikaria would just be better here. You know, this is a good petition to Direwolf Digital, like, just buff Claw of the First Dragon. Think about it for a second. Any deck that you're going to play Claw of the First Dragon for 7 power, you should probably just be playing Ikaria, you know? Just give the card some love, you know? Make it like a, I don't know, a 6-6 weapon, or make it cost 6. You know what I'm saying?
I mean, to be fair, not every fire deck is Justice as well. But yeah, should probably have been an Ikaria. So the package against the control decks is actually, in the version Kamado played, was 4 Rise to the Challenge with 4 Mokdos. Mm-hmm. So basically just try and outgrind your opponent with Mokdo. And I can see this being very problematic against a control deck that also has access to silence. Because as Lumi said, like, the deck is playing mostly removal, which is not great against creature light control decks. And if they can somehow if they can somehow deal with Yamato, like, you're on Stewart and Statue Maiden beatdown as a game-winning plan, so I don't really like that. I would have enjoyed having access to one Ikaria, although you should probably have to rework your power base then. But I think like just playing for Stewart and for Maiden is a very smart idea right now, because, as I said, it's very good against aggressive and mid-range decks, because the mid-range decks are time-based,
yep,
mostly right now. Also, like, they both handle a Makto, an opposing Makto, pretty well if you can deal with if you can remove it. We actually ran into a couple of like one deck that has tried to like go off with Gargoyles and Sacrifice Outlets, and one deck that wanted to use Revenge, and we just like played a Steward or a Maiden and yeah, laughed.
Yeah.
So that felt pretty good. Yeah, as I said, I would try to work in one Ikaria. I think that would be a smart idea, just to have an out against controlling decks and just to have a stronger late game option if you are up against a deck that can deal with a Makto. Because as soon as your opponent's deck can deal with a Makto, you're, as I said, on a 2-4 or a 3-5 beatdown plan, which can be hard to finish a game with.
Yeah. Tying this particular deck to the Praxis mid-range winning list, because we do believe that this deck gives you a fairly good matchup against that deck. You know, your various favor matches up quite nicely against the Initiate Descends, the Friendly Wisp, the Temple Scribes. You're just going to kill them outright. And then your 4-drop trades with their 4-drops. Your Story of the Past or the Maiden. And for the bigger units, Vanquish in particular, just a huge tempo advantage. You have Slay for anything that you don't catch.
And you have 4 of each.
Yeah, you have 4 of each. And let's not forget, you know, Maiden beatdown is not the greatest against control decks, but against unit decks,
yeah,
all them cudgels, man. Suddenly, anybody and everybody could beat down.
For sure. And like the Praxis deck, once you have a Maiden with like a couple of cudgels on it, they pretty much have to displacer it. If you can somehow land like 3 cudgels on it, which it does sound hard at first, but it actually really isn't if you're playing against a unit deck and that's your main focus. Like, they can't deal with it, except for Praxis Displacer.
You know, the funny thing about playing Maiden and cudgels is that you either get no cudgels or you just have too many cudgels to know what you do. Like, you just have like 10. Because generally, if they're not going to deal with Maiden, it's just going to keep killing things and having cudgels. So,
yeah.
I think, you know, we played a single event. We won 6-3. It was okay. You know, I think I would definitely think about tinkering some particular numbers with this list. But I feel like as a starting point, I think this is actually a fairly powerful list.
Yeah, I think so too. I think it's, I think it was a very smart decision by Kamado, and obviously it paid off. Like, he won. So congratulations to him. It's a nice shell, and I will be tinkering with it as well. I think there's still potential. Like the most obvious is the Ikaria, but I think you can do some other stuff as well with this. So maybe we can tinker with this a bit.
If we're thinking about changing this deck, apart from the one Ikaria, is there any other cards you would think to add in or perhaps take out from the original list? Maybe as a starting point to improve this list.
So I've been not super impressed by the Smuggler Stash, to be honest. So maybe we can cut down on those, play 1 or maybe even 0. I'm not sure. If we are adding Ikaria, maybe we have to cut back on 3 Various Favor and instead add a couple of Seek Power. Aside from that, maybe have one additional Rise to the Challenge target. But to be honest, I'm not even sure which one. Like, I think having Ikaria is fine. Maybe one Starseal Daisho. Although
sure,
it can't really get much bigger than 6-4 unless you're lucky with Inspire hits.
I don't really like Daisho without the Artisans, the Rakana
Artisans. Yeah, maybe.
Maybe you could get something like super spicy. What's a 5-power Stone Scar weapon with the quick draw? It's a 2-2.
The Runic Revolver.
Yeah, Runic Revolver. You know, make it a 4-2. It's a kill spell. Maybe not. And maybe you think about Reforge or just having like Dark Returns. You know, it doesn't get back as many things as a Smuggler Stash, but
I don't think either are very good in this deck, because like the Reforge, okay, the Reforge is very good with the Runehammer, but we don't necessarily always have a Runehammer. I guess with four rights to a challenge, we can think about a Reforge, actually. It does sound interesting. It's very good with Runehammer, to be honest. Dark Return, I'm not a huge fan of. Like, you're not getting back your Marktos, and you're playing eight of Steward and Maiden, and they are kind of similar, so I'm not sure you really need to bring one of those back.
Yeah, maybe like, you know, if it depends on what you want. You could also think about having like Cat Burglar as a three drop to just block. She's a decent blocker, and then once in a blue moon, you get a 2-for-1. There's a lot of different kind of units that are kind of like that, where I feel like this is a 2-for-1 dot deck, pretty much. So I'm pretty sure you could find other cards that gives you 2-for-1. Subvert if you're feeling like extremely
capital. I guess you don't even have to get too fancy. Like, I think just adding one Ikaria and revamping the power base a bit just makes this quite a bit strong already. Yeah. So maybe you don't even
powers,
need to get,
you know,
super fancy.
Deck.
Yeah. Seek power seems good.
Yeah. Alright, well, anyways, that is the deck that we believe will do fine against Praxis midrange if you're sick and tired of running into it. But we do have the rest of the ETS top 8. Is there any particular deck that you want to talk about? I mean, we have a lot of fairly standard stuff. There's a Mokhtar Armory list, Time Justice Primal midrange, Fire Justice Time Control, Argent Port midrange, Chalice Control, another Time Justice Primal deck.
Yeah, like, I guess those are decks that have been on people's radars, and there's an Ikaria blue list as well. Nothing too exciting, except the fact that I love every Kothan the Far Watcher being played. Have had to get that out of the way. But I think the rest is not too...
You wanted to talk about the Chalice deck, right? Because he has two Knucklebones on the sideboard.
Yeah, he does. And I was surprised by that. I didn't think that Knucklebones would make it into the top 8 of an ETS, but like, I have been proven wrong.
I don't even know how many times he brought it in from the sideboard. You know, that's a different discussion. But
let's assume he did it all the time and just won because of it, okay?
Well, it's in there for a reason. Cool.
One thing I do really enjoy for the Chalice lists are the Eileen's Choice.
Okay.
I'm not sure you even need three Vanquish anymore. The Eileen's Choice just being great against a large variety of decks. Like, for a Chalice, you don't have trouble with the smaller units just because of the nature of your deck. You play a lot of small units yourself, and most of them have very high toughness. So this is a super good removal for Chalice because it deals with the units it can't deal with, while also being very relevant in the control matchups. So, I think for Chalice, it's a very good fit.
In the mirror also, like being able to counter the Harsh Rules as well as the opposing Great Parliaments, pretty important. Channel Tempest, a lot of stuff that you counter. The power to leave up is pretty heavy though, especially for a deck like this.
I have been enjoying running one or two Backlash in the old Chalice lists though, so I think this is a super exciting addition. Leaving up three power as opposed to two is a big deal, but the spells you mentioned, like Great Parliament, Harsh Rule, or Channel the Tempest in the Mirror, or against Armory, Rise to the Challenge, and Smuggler's Dash, for example.
Sure.
Like, those come in later, and you don't necessarily, against the, if you're planning on countering the Harsh Rule, for example, you're not planning on playing a unit into the Harsh Rule anyway, so maybe you can keep up power more easily. Although that seems kind of wrong, because if you want to count it, you want
counterintuitive.
I don't know. Yeah, three is a lot, but like, the flexibility is very strong, so I think it's fine. I wouldn't overload on those. Like, I've seen lists playing four, and I don't necessarily agree with that, just because they can clump up your hand. But running two or three seems pretty reasonable.
Okay. Well, that is gonna conclude our discussion for the tournament meta decks that are happening recently. And I do want to say that recently we got an email from one of our listeners, and he sent in a list, and he wanted us to look at it. So shout out to Kevin, the person that sent us the list.
To Taken Much Air.
Sorry?
Username Taken Much Air.
Oh, taking my chair. I don't know if he wanted me to share that his name is Kevin. But I hope that he's not hunted down by the witch hunts. Or he's not hunted down by the rest of the internet now knowing that his name is Kevin. But basically, this is a Xenon aggro list. So I'm going to quickly run down the list. Which, by the way, for all of the deck lists, including the one that we just discussed with the anti-mid-range Praxis, it will be on wordpress.com/topdecktime. And this particular list is 4 Cold Aspirant, which is the 1-1 Overwhelm unit time for 1. And that's the one where you gain health, and then you know it gets plus 1/+1 for Life Force. Yeah. 4 Sanctuary Priest, the 1-2 that when you empower, you gain the health. 3 Annihilate, 4 Oasis Seeker, 4 Temple Scribes, 4 Varus Favor, 3 Amber Acolyte, 4 Ion the Abductor, 2 Cabal Countess, 2 Deathstrike, 4 Katra the Devoted. This is a card that we're building the entire deck around. 4 Marison's Disciple, 4 Memory Dredger, 4 Xenon Obelisk, and the rest are Sigils. So you probably have tried this deck or thought about building this deck or have seen this deck being played, but Katra, you want to read the card out? Because this deck is really, this card is the reason why we're building this deck.
Sure, Katra is a 4 power 3-3 with a 2 time and 2 shadow influence requirement, and she reads Life Force. Whenever you gain life, all of your units get +1/+1.
Yep, so we are trying to play Katra, and we're trying to gain as many separate instances of life as possible, and we're trying to build as big of a board as possible, and then we just kill them.
Yep.
Seems simple
and
enough.
Katra is busted. Like, if Katra lives and you have something even resembling a board, you're in such a good shape.
Yep. So,
like, that card has really amazed me.
Here's the... What's your initial take with a deck like this?
So, I played against a deck like this, or similar to this, bunch on ladder, I guess everybody has, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was one of the more obvious archetypes, I'd say.
Yeah, very linear, kind of easy to build.
Yeah. So my first impression was that it will be, or it would be playing similarly to some of the Shima Pack or Praxis token lists,
mm-hmm.
just because it's a kind of comparable game plan, flood the board early with some units and then make them big. The difference is that, like, the units you play, they have some synergy within themselves. Like, Cald Aspirant is very nice with both Sanctuary Priest and Oasis Seeker. And both of those are also very nice with Katra,
right,
as you mentioned. And you get access to basically 8 obelisks, which seems very, very, very strong for a deck like this, because as you remember, or you might remember us talking about, like, Obelisk is just the one card that made all those decks work, basically. Like, none of those decks would have been remotely as good as they are now with Obelisk.
Mm-hmm.
That was my first assessment. I thought, like, it would be playing similar, but have more access to Obelisks, with the trade-off being that, like, you are playing a synergy deck and you can draw the wrong half of your deck, quote unquote. Like, if you only draw Life Force Enablers, or if you only draw Life Force Rewards, like, you're not in a great shape. So,
well, there is only one Life Force Reward in this deck, right? It's just,
I mean, there's Cald Aspirant,
I suppose, but this is really a Katra deck.
And I mean, Cald Aspirant is really embarrassing if it stays
a
1-1.
True. Okay. I guess I have not really given the card the respect it deserves, but it does very frequently grow to like a 3-3, a 4-4, and then once you slam down the Obelisk or Katra gets going, then you know it's actually a kill condition for the deck.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you were already mentioning comparing it to Shimmer Pack, but let's actually go fully with the comparison and talk about different aspects of it. Starting with the fact mm-hmm. that I feel like this deck just dies to a harsh rule. Like, if they harsh rule you once, you might as well hit the concede button, because for this particular deck, it's just very, very difficult to refill. What ends up happening is you have a big board, you activate Katra once, they harsh rule, and then you just look in your hand, you're like, okay, I have one card in my hand. I can't actually do anything anymore. Whereas I think the difference with Shimmer Pack is that once you get to a certain point, you don't have to commit units anymore because your board is big enough, whether it's because you have a Xenon Obelisk down or you're just threatening to Shimmer Pack. And it forces your opponent to act. Whereas here, I feel like your deck is so fragile in the whole Katra combo that you're the one that's forced to do something because you're playing 1-1s and 1-2s and 3-2s. You need to get Katra going, and then they will react to you by having harsh rules. Do you, like, am I explaining clearly?
Yeah, like, and this is how it played out. Yeah. No, and I totally agree. It's like, my first impression was that it would play similar, but in reality, it's just it plays a lot differently in that you really have to get down a couple of units to get good effect out of them. Like, playing only an Oasis Seeker or only a Cult Aspirant or only a Sanctuary Priest is actually pretty embarrassing. Like, you're playing a 1-2 and your plan is to beat down. Good luck, sir. You need to play out a couple of those. You need to have, like, at least one that gains life and one that rewards you for life force, basically. Or you need to have a couple of guys because they're just all ridiculously small without the Katra or Obelisk buff. So you need to commit way more before... before you're actually confident in having a strong board. And at that point, if your opponent harsh rules you, like, okay, maybe you manage to sandbag one or two units, but like...
you're sandbagging a 3-2 or a 1-2.
Yeah, right. And like, you need to play them both immediately again. So yeah, and all the units in the deck actually are pretty soft to most removal and to relic weapons as well. So... where, like, I always found that with Shimmer Pack, I'm comfortable playing against Armory. It might not be super good, but it's a reasonable matchup, and I think both players can do stuff there, and both players can do things to get ahead. But like with this against Armory, it's a total nightmare. That was a little bit of a problem for me, at least, or the harsh rule decks in general.
Speaking about the reload, you know, you say that if you're sandbagging one or two units, your reload is consisted of a 3-2 and a 1-1, you know, like that's kind of a pretty average reload. Whereas if you do harsh rule a Shimmer Pack's board, you know, they play Scouting Party. Suddenly you're proposing a pretty big threat, especially you have, you know, Xenon Obelisk down. So the reload potential is very, very different between the two decks. And I do feel like the Shimmer Pack also is extremely consistent because a lot of the cards they play, it thins out the deck, right? You're playing for Varus, or sorry, not Varus Favor, you're playing, what is that card? The O2 Favor, Talir's Favor, excuse me. You're playing Amber Acolytes. Obviously, both decks are playing Temple Scribe, but in terms of Shimmer Pack, you're seeing so many cards, you're pulling so many cards out of your deck, so that even though you're playing only 4 Obelisk and 2 Shimmer Packs, the number of times you actually hit those cards is actually quite high.
Yep. Okay, whereas so here, to be fair though, if you're not playing against Harsh Rule, I really like the deck.
Oh, actually. This deck is insane.
Yeah.
Against aggros, I don't think I've actually lost against aggro.
Yeah, I mean, I managed to lose like one or two games, but oh my god, this shit on fire deck, excuse me. But like... like I played this on the first 2 days of after ladder reset, and I climbed to diamond immediately. Like I've been playing against was like either Skycrack or Arcana or Stonescar, and your matchup against those decks is very good. Like Stonescar is a little bit harder, but Skycrack and Arcana, like, they have a really hard time against this deck. You're playing a lot of units early that can interact with theirs. You're gaining a ton of life, and eventually your board grows out of proportions by so much, like they can't deal with it anymore.
The thing about this deck is that against other aggro decks, you could totally use your life as a resource. Because this is an aggro deck that eventually gains life back and then builds the board and have much, much bigger boards. It's very customary that I go down to like maybe 10, 8, and then suddenly you know, my Oasis Seeker attacks, or, you know, I play a Temple Scribe with Katra down, all of my board just way too big.
Yep.
Sometimes I need a chomp, but then...
also, holy cow, A and the Abductor.
Oh, yeah.
Like, If your plan is to go Mount Oniron, Fire Sigil Oniron, you're gonna have a hard time against A and the Abductor. Let me tell you.
Assuming you don't kill it with Vera's favor, like anytime Oniron comes down, you have like 12 to 14 cards that are just good against Oniron.
Exactly.
Which is kind of crazy.
So okay, so after we played a couple of games with this and realized like what the strengths and weaknesses are, we were thinking about can we change this in a way that it becomes better against Harsh Rule? Because like honestly, you are stomping on other aggro decks so hard. It's really amazing and it felt really good playing this against other aggro decks, but I like Lumi said, like one Harsh Rule is enough. Like I lost every game my opponent harshed me, and one was enough every time, so that was very sad. So we were thinking about, can we do anything to improve the deck and give it a better matchup against the controlling decks? And we have been searching for answers in Time and Shadow, and we couldn't really come up with anything there. Like, you can play a couple of Beckoning Lumen or something.
Yeah, before we kind of go outside the deck and talk about possible additions, let's talk about some of the things that the deck can do against Harsh Rule. I agree with your point that you still lose when the Harsh Rule gets played, but there are a couple of things that you could do just from the list itself. So first, let's talk about the ambush unit. You talk about Ion, mm-hmm. the Abductor. There's also two Cabal counters here, and yep. such that if you're expecting a Harsh Rule, you could sandbag but still deploy it at the end of turn to maintain aggro. Ion the Abductor in particular is so important with Katra, because you get the curve of turn 3 Ion, turn 4 you play Katra, you immediately attack with Ion, so you get the whole life force thing mm-hmm, going. Mm-hmm. So that's one thing that's pretty decent. In terms of a reload, Memory Dredger, which is the addition that Kevin made, to me this is an insane Memory Dredger deck, because sometimes you're dredging back a 5/5 Cold Aspirant. It's a one drop. It happens to be a 5/5. It's back. Temple Scribe, when you bring out Temple Scribe to gain health to activate Katra and draw a card, ooh, that is a sweet feeling. You could get back Sanctuary Priest if you need it. I mean, it's not crazy in terms of the value you're getting, but it's definitely very it's definitely a very strong play. If they Harsh Rule, you play Memory Dredger, you might have a shot to rebuild your board.
Yeah, I agree. And also in the games where like you didn't play necessarily against the Harsh Rule decks, like Memory Dredger has been pretty good in the list, to be honest.
Yeah. Speaking of which, we're going to talk about Memory Dredger a little bit after this particular list. Also, before we go away from the list, I do want to read some of the notes that Kevin wrote, mm-hmm. just to give us a little bit better perspective with the way that he built his deck. He says for a while he was running a pair of Shadowlands Guide as copy 5 and 6 of Cold Aspirant, a card that he found to be super powerful, but the deck doesn't have enough one drop to make it fully work, but it could be an avenue to be explored. Cabal Countess is also a recent addition to see how things go, but so far he's not been impressed by it. But the 3-drop slot is somewhat hard to fill. And then he's also found Memory Dredger to be excellent. You can hold him back against control, and he can rebuild your board, or throw him out against aggro to chump block with your scribes and then bring him back over and over again. Yeah, and then he's also one of your only few flyers, so it's fairly important. And then in terms of the removal suite, he's tried Banish, but just don't think it's positioned very well in the current meta. And I do agree these are too expensive for this kind of particular deck. So yeah, I've cut you off long enough. We decided to explore different options. You were thinking about adding Beckoning Lumen as perhaps a way to go longer against more control-oriented decks.
Yeah, like I tried to find something to help me reload, and I tried the Beckoning Lumen, and they have been alright, but not great. I haven't been too happy about them.
The problem to me about Beckoning Lumen is that you're spending your precious ammo, essentially. Like, you need to reserve your ammo for Katra, right? Mm. And then you play Beckoning Lumen, you use the sources for Life Force. Let's say then you draw into your Katra, and you're like, well, I have Katra now, but then I don't have the Temple of Scribe, or I don't have that Vera's Favor to go off. So, I have not tried Lumen, but it doesn't seem good.
Yeah, also it's not really easy to activate. Like on 5, you really have to have an Aeon or a Oasis Seeker in play, or else it's basically a 6 drop, and at that point, it's not really making me happy anymore. So, yeah, I wasn't too psyched by that. You were thinking about adding Justice to the deck, right?
Well, before I decided to add Justice, or thought about adding Justice, I was thinking Force Sabotage. You know, you're playing a fairly linear, aggressive deck, and you have some very, very, like, I can't beat cards. Harsh Rule in particular, Lightning Storm is kind of iffy in terms of beating. In terms of the Stone Scar, sorry, the Skycrack aggro deck, a good Rock Slide also, like, gives me some trouble sometimes. So having Sabotage to deal against certain like that. Relic Weapon is another thing that we want to take away. I tried it for a couple games, and what I end up gathering is that, yes, it is very good against Harsh Rule when you do hit the Harsh Rule, but then it just adds yet another layer of inconsistency with the deck. You're already trying to essentially combo out with Katra plus things that gain health, and then this is just another layer of that. You know, I've definitely seen, like, turn 4, I go Sabotage, let's see if you have a Harsh Rule. They don't. 3 turns later, they draw a Harsh Rule, they Harsh Rule me. Like, it's just, it's not a foolproof plan, and...
Yeah, like, the problem is that it isn't a linear deck, right? It isn't a linear aggro deck. Yeah. Like, you actually do need a couple of pieces to work together, and, like, adding a Sabotage there might roughen up your draws.
If this is Dot Seize, you know? Like, I think it would be great.
Yeah. Oh, you think so?
But it's not Dot Seize. And if you don't know what Dot Seize is, don't worry about it. It's just one of the best cards in Magic.
It's basically a Sabotage that also allows you to take units, which is dumb.
Yeah.
So, don't think we will be seeing that.
I hope we won't be seeing that. Yeah. But anyway, so I thought to add Justice in the deck, because I have seen a list online previously that was a Katra-based list, but it's running Visage. What's the full name of that card?
Stronghold Visage.
Stronghold Visage, the 5 power, 1 justice, 1 time card that lets you gain 1 health and 1 armor at the beginning of your turn. So then it becomes more of, hey, I have Visage in play, and all I need to do is have things and Katra, and eventually things will take care of themselves. So that's a very interesting way to kind of go about it. That list also ran things like Seraph, Combray Healers, as well as Owls, the 4 power, make Owls, if you have 8 power, it makes more Owls, Great Parliament. So it goes really well with the whole, you know, I'm going to go along with the Xenon Obelisk deck. The problem is all those Justice card, it helps you in a matchup that you're already good at. I think it helps you against aggro in particular, right? Adding Combray Healer, adding Stronghold Visage. It just doesn't help you against control matchups. You're still dying to Harsh Rule. I mean, it doesn't matter if your Katra is easier or better. It's just Harsh Rule. I guess the Owls in particular are good against Harsh Rule, but that's pretty much it.
Yeah, that's my thought as well. I'm not... I really don't like the Stronghold Visage in the deck, to be honest, because it's not a unit, which is a problem with Katra, I think. And even with Katra, you need to play her and have a survivor turn for Stronghold Visage to be doing anything. So I'm not really.
That's the problem with this deck, period, right? Like, Katra is awkward.
Yeah, but like the deck has some ways to activate in the turn you played. Sometimes the turn you played can be 5, and you activate it on turn 5 by playing a power with a Sanctuary Priest in play. Sometimes you can just play Iron 4 and attack with like either Oasis Seeker or an Aeon. So that's fine, I think. Like, the Stronghold Visage is a 5 power, doesn't impact the board, doesn't interact with control, and you still need to have Katra survive a turn for it to do anything with Katra, so I don't really like it. What I do like is the Great Parliament, just because it gives you a very strong card to reset after a Harsh Rule. And it's Great Parliament in Obelisk decks always seem pretty great to me, so... There might be something there. The problem I see is, like, you mentioned that all those cards are good against aggressive decks anyways, but the problem is, like, when you're playing 3-color, you like, you will have some awkward power-up draws, and you will just lose some decks to aggressive decks just because you're playing three factions. And, like, with this deck, there's really just no reason to risk that against an aggressive deck, I think, because, like, the two-color version is... Like, okay, so you're not winning 100% of the games, but it's super strong against aggressive decks. So, yeah, I think it's...
So, you know...
It's pretty hard to balance that.
There is one particular time of the month that you want to play a deck that's super strong against aggro decks.
Oh, hell yeah.
So, at the beginning of the month, at the beginning of the season, where season just reset, everyone's trying to race to Masters. Guess what deck everyone's going to be playing? Your Oni Ronin decks. And guess what? We're going to answer them right back with Varus Favor, Temple Scribe, Sanctuary Priest, Cole Aspirin, and Iron on 3. You know, that's kind of what it preys on, and it does a very good job at preying on that. In terms of, like, improving this deck to a Tier 1 status deck, what do you think Direwolf Digital need to print?
Oh,
like,
wow.
What kind of effect? Oof. Or what kind of cards?
That's
because
rough.
This, like, is, a, to me, a very linear strategy, right? Like,
so the, actually, I think the biggest, or not the only, but for sure the biggest problem are the mass removal cards. And like, if Direwolf Digital did something that answered those, like, that answers a harsh rule in just time, like, for example, if Stand Together was mono time, I think it would be a great fit.
Okay.
I don't think we will be getting those, though. Like, I don't think that Sion is the faction combination that is supposed to be able to answer harsh rule. Like, Sion...
Actually, I just had a...
The funny thing is, normally Sion decks are very strong against harsh rule decks just because of Dawnwalker, and this is the one Sion deck that can't really make use of it.
Right.
Excuse me, what do you want to say?
I was thinking about Sabotage again, and... A very Sabotage-esque card is called Slow. You look at their hand, and you get to choose the card and double the costing cost of it. It hits more stuff than Sabotage.
It does.
Is that an interesting inclusion?
It might be worth exploring. Again, I have the problem that it doesn't gain a life, and it isn't a unit, and it doesn't deal with the board, so...
Sure,
kind of awkward maybe in this deck, but I guess, like, it's a fine answer to harsh rule. The problem again is them top decking it, I guess, which this is why I would look for an answer to harsh rule that you can play just when they cast a harsh rule, so you can answer their harsh rule. Or, like, if you slow them and they don't have a harsh rule in hand and then they draw one within the next couple of draws, it just feels so awful. But yeah, I mean, obviously, the games where you get the harsh rule and just beat them down and they look at their 10 mana, 10 power card and cry, it probably feels great. But, like, what I think about the deck, and this is the conclusion I came to, is that it probably just isn't a tier 1 deck, which is fine. But as Lumi said, is a very, very, very strong deck in the first couple of days in the new season. And maybe even in the last couple of days, because people are then trying to climb to reach Masters. And so I tried to fully embrace that side of it. And I decided to add a couple of the Blistering Wasps. The 1-3 Deadly Flying.
Flying Deadly.
Right? So this is amazing against aggressive decks as well. And, like, I went full on like anti-aggressive decks. And just accepted the fact that I lose against Armory-style decks or Harsh Rule decks. Plus, I added a couple of Sinan Initiation. So, the Memory Dredger... Like, I really love the Memory Dredger, and I wanted to get more value out of them. So, I think adding a couple of either Sinan Initiation or maybe Predatory Instincts might be a fine idea. Just because you can get recurring killers... And I went with the Wasp, but you can just as easily go with, like, the 1-1 Deadly Spider, or you can just go ham on Kaldaspirant and just return those with Killer. Like, I think probably the safest way to do it is with the Spider, just because it will die, and you can get to rebuy it. Because sometimes with the Wasps and Sinan Initiation, they get 2-4 and they don't die, which obviously isn't the end of the world either, but you can't get recurring killers. So maybe this is something to consider, but I like the Wasp. It's just, it just has so much better stats, and it's amazing against Siege's units, and it's amazing against all the 2-1s, and I just really enjoyed the Wasp. So, this is where I landed on. I said, well, F the control decks, they will beat me anyways. Let's not try and fight it. Let's just try and make aggro as close to 100% as I can. And yeah, I mean, it kind of worked out the first couple of days, as we said. Like, I played this deck to diamond at least, and then I kind of had to stop because then the armor release came rolling in, and that's just a super feel bad moment.
I guess this is probably not the best solution to Kevin or taking my chair that sent it to us, which again, we appreciate the list. It always gives us some interesting things to think about and try. I think if we perhaps had more time, we could have maybe found a more elegant solution, but you know, even before I even played the deck, just seeing how the deck played from the other side, I just had a feeling it's not a very powerful deck, and playing with it just, yeah, I definitely could tell that there's definitely a lot of holes with the list. Maybe with new cards being printed in the future, we could kind of revisit the list again. But
the thing is, I think it's actually very, very powerful, actually. Like, there are turns where it's just unreal what this deck does. Like, I've had turns where I just played a Katra and trigger her 3 times within the same turn, and it was absurd. I added, like, 30 stats over my units. Okay, maybe not 30, but you get the feeling. Like, the deck is capable of very, very powerful things. It's just a problem that Harsh Rule is a card, and it's just not beating it.
Actually, if you think about it, right, with this as a tool in our deck box, and as Crown the Possibility as the other deck in our deck box, don't we just like beat the whole field?
Yeah, that's right. Like, yeah, that's right. We beat Agrana and we beat all the other slow, clunky, deadly stuff that people should be playing probably.
There you go. So all you really need to do is develop an algorithm to find out what deck you're queuing into, and you just gotta, you know, load the right deck, and you just have 100% win rate and on ladder.
I love it.
Yeah.
No, but like as I said, I think it is a very strong deck in the right metagame. That metagame being not very control dominated. Which, to be fair, if more Praxis decks turn up on ladder, like Harsh Rule decks aren't amazing against those. Except maybe the
definitely not
silence.
Against the Dawnwalkers.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Dawnwalkers are pretty annoying for Harsh Rule. Yeah, I agree.
So you can definitely climb with this if you dodge the right decks. Yeah, I'm sorry, Kevin, if we didn't manage to make this tier 1.
Break the meta.
We really appreciate you sending us the list, though, and I personally had fun tinkering around with it.
Yep, same here. Moving forward with this week, one more topic I want to talk about is Memory Dredger. I think this card is a card that has intrigued me the most coming out from set 2.
Mm.
And let's actually quickly read out the card, the full card, because I think moving forward, maybe this week or in the next week, I want to really build a couple of different shells for Memory Dredger. So Rico, if you can you quickly read out what Dredger does and talk about, you know, some of the strengths and weaknesses of the card?
Sure. So Memory Dredger is 4-power... double shadow influence requirement, 3/4 flying. And when Memory Dredger hits the enemy player, play a unit with cost 2 or less from your void.
2 or less.
2 or less. Correct. Yeah. So up front, stat-wise, it's alright, not great. Like, for the same cost, you can get an Impending Doom or a Steward. Both of those have slightly better stats. But it's fine, and it has evasion, so that helps it with the ability that triggers when you connect.
Mm-hmm.
The tricky part is getting value out of this more than 0 times, and I guess more than 1 time. So when you play this, you ideally already have a unit in your void, and ideally they can't handle your Memory Dredger, and then ideally you bring it back, and then ideally it does something, and ideally you can do this again, which seems hard.
That's a lot of hoops
to jump through. That's a lot of hoops to jump through. If you manage to jump those hoops, though, it's a super powerful effect. Like, recurring recursion. That sounds weird, but I think it's the correct way to say it. Recurring yes. recursion? Okay, yeah. Is super strong.
So let's actually give out a couple of scenarios, right? Let's say if you have a Temple Scribe just in the void because you blocked the Oni Road and you traded with it. Whatever. Later, a couple turns later, you attack with Memory Dredger, you get back a Temple Scribe. Is this sequence event worth putting Memory Dredger in the deck?
I mean, that's a nice
instead
sequence.
Of Impending Doom.
Yeah, that's the question, right? I would say, like, if you can consistently do this, it sounds strong.
But we can't consistently
you
do
can't
it.
Consistently
that's
do it. And that's the problem, right? And even if you do it once, like, once is good, but it's not... Like, it's a two-card combo, quote-unquote. No, actually, no, it's not. Because Temple... You want to be playing Temple Scribe anyways.
I think the other big thing is the fact that, you know, if you could do it once... Like, every time you attack with this, there is more and more pressure for your opponent to deal with it. You're snowballing harder and harder when you do attack with this.
Well, here's the thing, though. You need the two power units in your void for this to snowball, actually. So
I think for sure that's
what
the easiest part
with,
to...
Yeah, maybe.
Over, right?
So I think what you really need to do with Memory Dredger is abuse the fact that... that all your units keep all your buffs and keywords. So
yes,
one way to go about
sure.
it, as we already mentioned, is a deadly killer unit.
Mm-hmm.
Because that can actually also clean the air, quote-unquote, for Memory Dredger to get through and provide recurring board advantage. And like, if you're playing this against a unit deck and you have a recurring deadly killer, it's probably game. Like, that's pretty close to lock. Like, they have to deal with the Dredger or else they won't be playing Eternal anymore.
well, against any unit-based decks, right?
Yeah. I mean, they can't really fight you if you can just manage to kill a unit every turn. And that's super strong.
You know, a deck that I played in set one was kind of like that, where I played a Xenon deck with... Actually, I played Direfang Spider in my constructive deck with 4 Predatory Instinct. And it also plays things like Dark Return, and it also plays Clock Roaches. And the whole idea is to, you know, I'm going to put Killer either on my Spider or on my Roaches, and then I Dark Return
Killer
back.
Roaches.
So I'm just like, yeah, Killer Roaches or Killer Spiders. And I do believe I played the 3-1 that brings back a 1-drop, so it brings back more Spiders. So, you know, like... That's kind of the play style. You do have 4 more killer effects now in the form of Xenon Initiation.
Yep.
The 1-3 Wasp that you mentioned is just a better killer. Like, so you could play the whole deck around that particular idea. The question is, what happens if you don't draw Memory Dredger? Because there are going to be a large number of games where you don't draw Memory Dredger.
Right.
Can your Wasp and Spider win? I don't think so.
It would be hard, I think. Yeah, it sounds hard.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's the ultimate problem. It's like, if you're trying to build a deck around Treasury Gate or Memory Dredger or Crown of Possibility, what is the game plan when you don't draw those cards?
Yeah, exactly. So one more option to abuse it is Infiltrate, because you can get repeating infiltrates of the units once they... come back, you can infiltrate again. So okay. Lethrai Ranger seems kind of interesting, and it's borderline constructed playable.
Okay.
Blood Beetle is alright, although I personally hate the card with a passion.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much it already. Like, I'm not a big fan of playing Yeti Spy, to be honest. Or Snowslinger.
Gorgon Swiftblade? Come on.
Yeah, I mean, Gorgon Swiftblade, you don't really get much out of the infiltrate if you do it all over again. I guess it's a deadly unit again that can just block and recur, and it's not embarrassing to play on its own. It's not great though.
Sure. What about units with like great summon effects that you get the stuff immediately? Like, think about Temple Scribe. I guess also Dark Wisp.
Yeah, Temple Scribe and Dark Wisp seem like pretty good options for this. Also, maybe one of my favorites is Tranquil Scholar.
Yeah, we came upon that one together, and we're trying to build something with Tranquil Scholar and Memory Dredger.
Like, Tinker Apprentice seems nice. Spawfolk actually seems nice, because once you return a Spawfolk, you are very likely to be able to recur another thing.
Mm. Yeah.
Desert Marshal seems nice. And I guess Grenadine Drone is okay.
Well, so as you're mentioning these units, I have tried a whole bunch of them. So I have tried Tinker Apprentice, as we did an episode on Armory, and I was trying to push for the Tinker Armory deck. Well, I gotta be specific. It's Tinker Apprentice, because there's actually a card called Tinker now.
That's true, yeah.
But I was thinking, okay, you know what's good in the Armory deck? Recano Artisan is a good card. What if I get to recur Recano Artisan? Then we're really doing it, right? And then, you know, since, like, okay, I'm trying to build a Memory Driver Armory deck, I'm going to play Recano Artisan anyways. I'm going to throw in a couple of Tinker Apprentice. You know what the problem really is? If I'm winning the games, it's because of my Armory Shell is winning the games. It's not because Memory Dredger is doing anything. It's so rare that I actually got to first play Recano Artisan, have the Artisan die, then play Memory Dredger, connect with Memory Dredger, and then draw weapons after that. That was just like, why am I trying so hard?
Yeah.
Like, Memory Dredger is just not, this is not it. And then you're playing Tinker Apprentice, which is embarrassing as well. It's like...
And so another idea of mine was potentially pairing it with a Brimstone Altar, so you can just get Dark Wisps or Ticking Grenadine all over again.
Oh, that was my idea.
All right. No, it was totally your idea. I tried to seal that there. No. It was Lumi's idea. Excuse me. He played that, and I spectated. I totally stole that idea. I'm sorry.
I can't even tell you if you're being sarcastic right now or not, but...
No, I'm so, not. I really did get that idea from you, so credit where credit's due.
Yeah, so that particular list... I mean, I originally already enjoyed playing the Brimstone Altar list. You know, it's Brimstone Altar with Grenadine Drones. I had Ticking Grenadine there as well as, you know, a lot of options to return for Memory Dredger. I'm playing the Grief card, the 3-1 charge... Deadly. I mean, it doesn't have too much synergy with the... there's no synergy whatsoever.
Yeah.
But it is a... It actually works well with the rest of the deck, because it works
okay with Alta, yeah.
You can attack. Yeah. Attack, gain health, sack it. And then as the Brimstone Altar list, it also runs Quarry, good filtering. It runs the full package of Madness, Devour, and Combust. So there are cool things I've done in the past where I madness one of the two drops, combust, kill their guys, and then use Memory Dredger to return their two drops with varying degrees of usefulness, because, you know, I can't control what two drops I get. Yeah, and like you mentioned, like being able to dredge back Wisps. But in this particular deck, I'm dredging back mostly Ticking Grenadines. That's how I win. Like every time I dredge back Ticking Grenadine, that's 5 damage to their face. And with the help of... Brimstone Altar, I could immediately... Well, first of all, I could guarantee ways to get things into my void. Mm. And secondly, I could immediately use the newly dredged back unit as fodder. I've had a very light splash of Justice for the card that I don't even know the name of, but it's a 5 power, a single Justice requirement for a 3-3 with Revenge. And with Summon, you could select a 1 cost card from your deck and put
unit
it in your hand.
Yep.
Unit, yeah. So, you know, the idea
it's
is that...
It's a Crown Watch Press Gang.
Crown Watch Press Gang, there you go. The idea is, like, you know, you find more gas, and then you dredge back more gas. It's a 3-3 with Revenge, so it'll come back for more gas. The whole idea is I'm going to try to, you know, grind you out. Actually, pretty decent against all these Praxis mid-range decks. You know, you spend 4 power to play a Sandstorm Titan. I play 3 power to Madness. I steal it, hit you back for 5, and then dome you for 2 with Brimstone Altar. It's like, it's okay, you know, it's aight.
Yeah, I think if you want to be playing this in a field where Praxis is a huge contender, I would think about adding Torrent of Spiders. The card is just very good against time based decks.
I mean, I just steal the Dawnwalkers. That's cool too.
Yeah, that's a good idea as well. Like, or you can, add a couple of mains for Stuarts, but I really like the Torrent of Spiders against the mid-range time decks, especially in a deck like this where you can kind of fill up your void Halfway consistently, I'd say.
Yeah. In terms of how effective that deck I just described with the Brimstone Altar, it's, you know, you're playing so many inconsistent pieces together. Madness, Devour, Combust, that's just one piece. I think the deck actually operates decently when you don't draw Memory Dredger. That's why I feel like this is perhaps my best Memory Dredger deck so far, because I could still win without it. So there's that. But another very interesting shell I want to try is Memory Dredger plus Stone Shaker. Is that card? Gotta really pull up the text. Can you, or maybe you could pull it up for me?
So Stone Shaker is a 3 power, 1 fire, 1/1, and it has summon. Reduce the cost of units in your deck by 1.
Yeah, so you could kind of get the idea where we're going with this, where, you know, Memory Dredger only returns power cards with power 2 or less. Well, if you reduce your cost of your deck, then you could, you know, build your deck in such a way that you're not only reducing 2 power cards, you could reduce 3 drops, 4 drops, and 5 drops. And the nice thing with the Stone Shaker is that once you get that going, you could keep recurring that, so you could discount your whole deck. I don't know how important that might be, but, you know. Stone Shaker is also a card that I'm interested in trying out, because it's just quite a unique effect.
Yeah, that's true.
But currently I have no idea, you know, what I could do with it.
It has been alright in the Mono Warp deck I told you about, just because it allows you to chain stuff. I'm not sure if it's good enough outside of that, just because once you draw the units after you play the Stone Shaker, like, maybe the first one, maybe the second even benefits from being discounted, but after that it just doesn't matter anymore. Except, obviously, if you can abuse it with cards like Haunting Scream or the Dredger. But
Haunting Scream plus Dredger is also another interesting idea. You know, I might want to try the Infiltrate deck that you're mentioning. You know?
Yeah, I mean, maybe try and get some fire in there. Because, like, the Infiltrate cards, if you Haunting Scream them and then you bring them back with Memory Dredger, you're losing out on the charge part. Yeah. Doesn't seem great either.
What about...
Like, I really want Memory Dredger to be really good, but, like, every time I think about something, it's just flawed in some way.
I mean, you could always do something better. You could just play a Sandstorm Titan. Yeah. You know, that's the end of the discussion. But it's not fun. What about Memory Dredger with Bad News? You know, just get in there.
All right, calm down.
Oh, going off tangent here. By the way, like, the educational / useful part of the podcast has been long over, if you guys couldn't tell. We're just, you know, talking about useless decks now. A deck that I've been thinking of trying is also Grimva plus Stonescar Leviathan.
Okay, I like it.
That's an insta kill.
If you manage to kill the Leviathan, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, sounds good.
That's easy, right? So.
Doesn't work that way. So they first get to reset. They first get reset to 7, and then it deals them 7. Is that how it works?
Yep.
Or do they get dealt 7 and then get reset to 7?
No, I'm pretty sure it's reset to 7 and then deals to 7. Okay. I'm not positive. Don't quote me on this. Yeah, so I think the whole idea is you play Stone Shaker, right? And whether it's Memory Dredger a billion times or, you know, Mirror Image even a bunch of times, you just discount your deck. And then you play those guys. Problem is that Grimva costs, like, the influence that it does is just kind of heavy.
Yeah.
The Stone Scar Levine costs double Stone Scar requirement or triple?
I think it's triple. Let me check. It is,
I think it's just double.
Yeah, it's double.
Okay. So you need 3 Justice, 3 Shadow, and 2 Fire for this combo to work, and you need to play 14 power Wharf of card and have a way to kill the Stonescar Leviathan. I mean, there's a lot of hoops to jump through, but it's an insta kill. You know, like, we could get behind that. Oh, it's not an insta-kill through armor or Aegis, but, you know, that's it's just fine text. Don't worry about it. Look, guys, if you guys have any good memory dredger decks, I mean good memory dredger decks, or if you got some this, you know, one-hit KO combo that, you know, you guys got something going, do send it our way at topdecktime@gmail.com. We will be more than happy to look at it and, you know, see what we could do with it.
Definitely.
Yeah. But how long has been our podcast been going on? Yeah, maybe too long. So I think we're going to end it here. Any kind of concluding thoughts about anything? Memory dredgers or
I just wanted to thank all of the listeners for tuning in every week, or maybe if this was your first time, a warm welcome from our side. We're really happy that, like, you get to listen to, you do listen to us, like, every week, or maybe even once, I don't know. But, like, this is why we do it, basically. Like, we both have fun playing Eternal, and we enjoy playing together as well. But we probably wouldn't be doing the podcast without you guys. So I wanted to thank you all for listening.
Cool. Yeah. And you better thank us. Because right now I'm sitting in my hotel room, 2 a.m. I could be in Seattle City's partying it up. But here I am instead of recording a podcast.
Oh, you would not be actually, in Seattle City partying it up, be honest.
Actually, I'm a nerd. I don't go out. I party in my hotel room with, like, YouTube or something. I have something to talk about. Oh, actually, a little bit about my life. Recently, I started reading a series by Pierce Brown? Brown Pierce? Called The Red Rising. Rico, if you read a lot, I'm sure this is a book that you heard of. But
I haven't yet.
Okay, basically, it's kind of like a sci-fi book about a future where humans has colonized, like, the solar system. Mm-hmm. And this new race of human kind of came to power. They overtook the old race of human, and they're just like, they're perfect. You know, they're smarter, they're more intelligent, they're stronger. And, you know, society became a hierarchy, you know, like you got all these like superhumans at top, and then you got the soldiers that, you know, back them up. And then you got the engineers, you got the smart people. And then all the way in the bottom, you got all the like slaves essentially.
Mm-hmm.
And the book is about the one slave that is trying to, you know, rise to the top and revenge and overtake this whole thing. It's a trilogy. I finished the first book called The Red Rising. I kind of suggest you guys to Google it, check it out, if you just enjoy reading. Recently, I just downloaded it for my Kindle and took it to the plane and read it. And was like, wow, this is amazing. It's good. So I do fully recommend other people to check it out.
Nice. I will.
Okay. All right. So that's going to do it for this episode of the Top Deck Time. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Our intro and concluding music is Monody by the Fat Rat. And that will do it. Of course, you can always send us email or questions or deck lists at Top Deck Time. Or you could just find us on Reddit. We are frequent users there. So
yep.
That'll be it. My co-host is and has always been Rico. We're going to hear from him next week as well. And for now, we are done. Thank you for listening, and we will see you next week. Bye, guys.
Bye.